Welcome to the MJA podcast. My name's Kate Swanell. Today I'm chatting with Dr. Rosalie Schultz, who's from the Centre for Remote Health at Flinders University. Rosalie, thank you very much for your time and welcome.
Thank you very much, Kate.
Now, you've co-authored an article for the MJA, the title of which is Caring for Country and the Health of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians. Why is caring for country relevant to the health of Indigenous Australians?
Oh, thank you for this opportunity to speak, Kate. And I really have to acknowledge that I'm not an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person, and there's a certain tension in attempting to speak for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but I'm really speaking from my experience and readings as a doctor.
Yep.
And what I understand about Aboriginal people and what they want for their health. And we've had Aboriginal health strategies since the 70s, and then that really well-read one in 1989, the National Aboriginal Health Strategy,
yes,
which really emphasised that health is not about individuals not being sick. Health is about the social, emotional and cultural well-being of the whole community, and it's about a whole of life view, and it's about people's connection to country.
Yes.
And as a medical practitioner, I see that, and then you go into the clinic and it's all about the clinical situation of the individual person in front of you.
Mm.
And it just seems to be such a disconnect between what the people themselves tell us and continue to tell us and have been telling us for 50 years,
yes,
and yet how we provide health services for them. And I guess in my paper I've quoted the extraordinary expense that we're now providing for health services that we offer for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people,
mm-hmm,
and yet we see really we're not getting the outcomes that we expect based on our worldview, based on the statistics that we measure, and the latest strategy is the Closing the Gap strategy with some really, really narrowly focused markers of health.
Yes.
Well, when you talk to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people themselves, they haven't changed. They're interested in their community and their culture and their country. And kind of taking a step back and taking off your biomedical hat, it's no surprise that we're not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
However,
yeah,
when you step out of the clinic and see what other scientists and other branches of service provision are working with Aboriginal people, there's a completely different thing happening. And that's the recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's strengths and their identity and their knowledge and their concern for the country. And if we take a step back and start working with that, there might be so many opportunities for the health gains that we're hoping to see.
Let's talk a little bit about land management and the role that plays in terms of Aboriginal employment, Aboriginal economy, and ultimately Aboriginal health. How many of our Indigenous people are working on land management actively as we speak?
That's obviously a bit of a conundrum because a lot of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people are working on country because that's what they want to do.
Yep.
And it's outside of the mainstream economy and it's outside of our non-Aboriginal way of counting them. So we know there's about 800 full-time ranger positions,
yep,
across the whole country, which is absolutely tiny when you look at the size of the country.
Yes.
But we also know that in the southeast corner of Australia and places where Aboriginal people have been disconnected and removed from their country and had a different community imposed on them for much longer, people are still concerned about the health and well-being of their country, and they're still wanting to get out there and relate to their country as they have for 50,000 years.
Mm.
So although the numbers are small and the funding is minuscule when you look at it compared to the health budget,
yes,
we actually don't know in the greater scheme how much Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are involved in caring for country. And I guess beside that, there are so many opportunities
mm.
for gains I guess both in our biomedical sense, when people are away from the ills of civilization, including drugs and crime,
yes.
But and in the place where they want to be, there's those biomedical gains, but there's also the cultural gains, the opportunities for languages and cultures to be revitalized and strengthened for innumerable different benefits.
So let's talk about the medical benefits. They're out and about, they're getting physical activity.
So there's opportunities for people to harvest bush food.
Mm.
It's really ironic that there's never been a good census of how much bush food and people are taking, because since the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's diets were first measured in our Western way, there was just an assumption that not much was, that the amount it was contributing to their nutrition was negligible, and we've continued that with that assumption ever since. So there's actually not good information on that. But so there's the physical activity, there's the food, there's being away from overcrowding and the urban situation with alcohol and violence.
Yes.
So there's those benefits. And I think as we look at health in a greater scheme, we see that control is such an important determinant of health. Michael Marmot's work on the social determinants of health and control and empowerment are such powerful determinants of health. That's where I think the greater gains are. We might look at the smaller biomedical gains, but I think if we acknowledge the recognition of people's authority and their skills and their knowledge, that's where we'll see much greater gains.
It's about giving them back the control over their own sense of well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are telling us over and over in so many different ways.
Yeah. So what's the answer? Is it difficult to improve the opportunities for Indigenous people to get involved in land management? Is it going to be an expensive exercise, or is it something that's easily done?
I think it's not easily done at all. I think many of the barriers are related to access to lands, and because most Aboriginal people are now living in urban settings,
yeah,
and most of the land has been taken over by the colonising forces, it's quite difficult for people to access their traditional country, even though from the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Survey, we know that nearly 80% of people recognise a homeland, not only about a quarter live on it, and only about half have access to it. There's less Aboriginal people in remote country than there's been any time for 50,000 years.
Yeah.
And so when we look at the state of land degradation, of feral animals and weeds kind of colonising the land, we can see how it's going to be so difficult to do anything about that unless we give people who want to be on those land, who own those lands, opportunity to be out there and provide the services that they wanted. But we think their services, they think that they're being on country, caring for country, to look after that land as it's been looked after for tens of thousands of years.
Because let's face it, we're spending a lot of money not necessarily in the right places.
Yes, and I think every time we get a new report on the closing the gap, we see how things are actually not even stagnating. Many of them are going backwards because we're still looking at a narrow biomedical colonising approach to how we measure, what we measure and how we measure things.
Yes, and I think employment is one of those areas that's going backwards, isn't it?
And that's because we count employment the way we want to count employment,
yes.
Rather than counting employment with people providing the services that they want to provide. Look, I think it's important to see this not just as a remote Australia issue.
Mm.
I think even the word remote comes from people who are not remote.
Yes.
You know, I live in Alice Springs and we have a sign in the shopping centre that says, buy locally, supports remote Australia. We're not remote. We're in the centre of our world. And likewise, people who are in even more remote communities are in the centre of their world.
Yes.
So we need to look at our worldview and see where that's coming from in order to have a much broader perspective of where we are now and where we're going in the future.
Rosalie, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.